Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Twist it.
Push gun.
There we go. In my head, dear listener, I'm going back.
Yeah, I know. When we do our dog fights with the 108, or if we're flying out of ducks with the bouche on, you definitely do the dagger mate, noises, I assure you.
Welcome to the Damcasters, brought to you in association with the Pima Air and Space Museum. I'm your host, Matt Bell. Over the last while, there's been an interesting trend in warbirds and the way we interact with them, and that is the rise of flying in the back seat of them. So famously, we've got plenty many two-seater Spitfires. We have TF-51s as well, the Mustangs with the little monkey seat in the back, and if you're abroad, you can even fly in the back of the Canadian Warplane Heritage Lancaster B-25. In the States, there's plenty of B-25s that'll take you up as well. Now, it's expensive. We're talking thousands of pounds for about a half hour. So it is a niche market. But when you go niche within a very small market itself, you get to something like BE-505, the two-seat Hurricane, which is operated by Hurricane Heritage out of White Waltham and other places around the UK. Now, when we were up at Duxford for the Christmas Hurricane show that they had a little while ago, and we interviewed Rebecca Greenwood Harding about it, Matt Willis and I had to point out to a few of the punters that had come through which one the two-seater Hurricane was, because Hawker Restorations have done an incredible job with the aircraft, making it a very sympathetic conversion, because there never was a proper two-seater Hurricane. There were some weird ones that went out that literally, like, open cockpits. They're not great. Anyways, enough rambling. I get to geek out very hard in this episode. So if you're listening to the podcast, it's going to sound pretty normal. But if you're watching the YouTube version, and I'm recording this on video in my new little office with books and everything, the first interview part with Mike Collett, pilot for Hurricane Heritage, and Abigail Clark, who's the ground operations boss, is a standard chat. But the walk around and the cockpit tour we do of BE-505, where we learn how to turn her on and things like that — that sounds naughty, you know what I mean — that is all recorded as a video. So do check out the YouTube version as well. I hope you enjoy this. This is me putting my face out there on YouTube, which is never great. We'll see how that goes. In the meantime, let's start with Mike and find out, how does someone start their journey to flying Hurricanes? What was the bug? What got him into it?
Well, if I'm brutally honest, I don't think I've ever wanted to do anything else. I can't think of any point in my life where I wasn't surrounded by aeroplanes. My father flew gliders and then later microlights when I was growing up as a kid. But, you know, a standard childhood with Airfix models and of Hurricanes and Spitfires and posters on your bedroom walls, and it's just always been whatever what I, you know, what I've wanted to do. I think some of my earliest memories is Harvard's flying over my house when I was a kid. So,
and once you got past the Airfix, what was your first flight in? Was it normal stuff or was it RAF? Or
no, well, I sort of misspent childhood growing up at Wickham Air Park, Booker Gliding Club. And I think my first flight was probably in the back of a tow plane with a glider on the back. There's some photos of me kicking around very, very young, sat in the back. I'm not sure they would ever let you do it these days, but so I think that was my first flight. And then I progressed into gliders and flew gliders for a long time.
Gliding is an interesting thing. I was down at, it's gone straight out of my head, up on the hill, ex-fighter base, Sussex Way.
Sutton Bank, right. Up on the hill, or Parham?
Oh, this is terrible. I had this all prepared.
Shallock?
No.
Where are we talking about? What part of the country?
Engineering base. They do engines down there these days. We used to put our 7.3s in there. Oh, crap.
Lasham.
Yes, oh, Lasham. There we go.
That's, I would say Lasham's on top of a hill.
Well, it's, yeah, it's hilly for me. Where I am, anyway.
Lasham, yeah.
We was down there doing a talk, and the gliding fraternity is a very passionate one, and there are some who think moving on to something with engines is slightly sacrilegious.
Yeah, I know, but they all like to be towed up by something with an engine generally, or a winch launch. So there is an engine involved somewhere along the lines. That's
I'm just having memories of sitting in the bar and being told about how there's flying and then there's pure flying.
Yeah.
By a very old gentleman who was waiting for his taxi because he was no longer in a position to A, fly, or B, drive.
Yeah.
But that was a good day.
No, I mean, gliding's fantastic. I mean, it is pure flying. It is. I did an awful lot of it. Ended up being chief flying instructor and all that sort of stuff. So I had a very busy sort of 14 years doing it between school, university and stuff. But I don't really miss it. I think I did everything I really wanted to do in it. And so maybe one day I'll go back when time becomes more available.
Well, it is because you are terribly, terribly busy. And we're here at the wonderful White Waltham, a place with an incredible aviation history. And I do need to see the ATA flag before I leave.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
That's the main reason for coming, other than hurricanes.
Yeah.
So,
and there's some lovely photos of the ATA girls.
Yeah.
On the walls here, next to short Stirlings and things like that.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. But let's get back to you and Ultimate Aerobatics, because that's something else we need to talk about, because I suppose that's the main gig as opposed to flying around in Hurricanes as well.
Well, I mean, for me personally, my main gig is actually I fly business jets. But thankfully, I don't go to work particularly often. Which is great, which has allowed me to build all this other stuff up in the background with quite a lot of help from people like Abigail and the team that are out there flying the aeroplanes while we're sitting here drinking tea. But yeah, that's kind of, everything has grown out of Ultimate Aerobatics and that started with a Pitt Special. And then we moved on to an extra, and then from the extra we moved into the Harvard, and then from the Harvard I moved into the Mark 1 Hurricane, and then it's kind of grown into Hurricane Heritage, so... so that's where it is, and it's something I'm immensely proud of.
How does something like a Pitts prepare you for a warbird?
Really well, actually. The Pitts is a little high-performance aerobatic aeroplane that teaches you everything you could possibly need to know about gyroscopic effects. because every time you move one of the controls, it has another effect. So, and when you open the power... it wants to go off to the left. And so you're fighting that with rudder. And that prepares you really, really well to go and fly these high-performance warbirds, such as the Hurricane, where you have massive propellers and huge amounts of power. Also, on landing, they are quite tricky to land. And they require a lot of rudder input to keep the aircraft straight. All of these are really good skills to then transfer into flying warbirds. Slightly different. But if you can land a Pitt Special, especially at White Waltham, then you're in a really good position to go and fly anything else.
They're stunning, stomach-turningly amazing to watch do their things, those aircraft. And the podcast is sponsored by Pima Air and Space, and they look after Melanie Estes as well. But we will chat, because what those acrobatic aircraft, other than Pitts as well, especially the modern stuff, can do is it looks physics defying.
Yeah,
a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's great, and it's and again, you can use the gyroscopic effects of the huge engines that we've got in these aerobatic aeroplanes to do stuff that people just go, "How are you doing that?" it's quite straightforward, but you know, let's not.
Leave some mystique in,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, but so when I do an aerobatic display in something like the Cap 232 or our extra. The way that I fly that aeroplane is very, very different to the way that I will display the Hurricane on the Harvard. There's two very different ways of flying aeroplanes.
Because I guess that's the main thing. When we see a warbird fly, we're seeing it being flown in a very specific set of parameters as opposed to an aerobatic aircraft. Because even though these are stored aircraft, a lot of them are fresh, they are still an old aeroplane. What goes into, before we get on to talking about your first go in a warbird, what is that set of parameters like for displaying it? Because we've heard some people talk about it, but when you're getting into one and you know you're going to display, there's certain rules, you're not going to want to overstress or go much power.
Lots of prep and practice. And our practice is something that we don't get huge amounts in warbird flying. Now, the whole passenger carrying SSAC rules in the UK has allowed a lot of us to keep much, much more current than they did in the past. For me, it's made warbird displaying much safer because the pilots are much more current than they used to be. I was having a chat with someone like Stu Goldspink a little while ago. He said, in a good year, he might have got 7 hours in a Hurricane. And he would be asked to go and display it, and have to just turn up and maybe the transit over to kind of get familiar. And suddenly he's rocking into an air show with not huge amounts of practice. Whereas now, we're flying the Hurricane most of the days of the week in the summer, so we all are nicely current. From a G point of view, the aeroplanes are stressed at quite high G, sort of plus six, but you won't see many people pull more than 3G in them. It just doesn't look right.
Yeah,
it's not what people expect to see from a Spitfire Hurricane. You're looking for smooth, graceful aerobatics and really showing the beauty of the aeroplanes off. From a power point of view, again, we're barely using half the full power on the aircraft to try and nurse the engine. You know, when you look at the costs of operating these aircraft, the overhaul costs on the engines are significant.
So it's that tricky aspect of the economy of it, plus ensuring that the punters get good photos, because you could have a lot of fun in a display that would look terrible from the outside.
Well, that's right. It's so I could go and do an 8-point roll in a Hurricane, but people would be going, why is he doing an 8-point roll in a Hurricane? Because it doesn't look right. It's Abigail, for example, hates it when I do 4-point rolls. even with a punter that asks for it, she just think it's not a very Hurricane maneuver.
Do you get a stern look when you come back?
Once you watch the videos, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But for me, doing barrel, big loopy barrel rolls and round, that's what these aeroplanes should be flown like. And equally, you're talking about, what people want to see and what they want to take photos of. Most of the time, they just want top-side passes and bottom-side passes. And you can do that with quite a lot of ease.
So you can get a nice three-quarter shot and put it on the wall.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, we're trying to entertain the public that are there for a display. We're not trying to scare anyone. And you need to be operating well within the limits of the aeroplane and well within the limits of the pilot. Mm-hmm. So
would you class... what was your first warbird that you got your hands on your own?
Well, first proper warbird, if we're talking, World War II Merlin-powered stuff, was the Mark I Hurricane R4118. I was lucky enough to fly some Fokker triplane replicas, and obviously got quite a lot of time in Harvards before.
Let's pivot. Yeah. Fokker triplane replica.
Yeah.
We talked about gyroscopic effects and things. That's all gyroscopic effects.
Well, it is. And originally it would have had a full rotary engine, so the whole engine would have rotated rather than just the prop. So the one that I was lucky enough to fly had a Warner Scarab engine in it, so the engine was stationary with a two-blade propeller. But we were often going off to displays all around the country flying it. And it was a very, very demanding aeroplane to land. Not so bad taking off, not too bad in the air, but for landing it, and it just didn't cope with crosswinds at all. It was certainly one of the most interesting things to land. The great thing is it all happens very slowly. So ground looping is not normally a good thing, and it's not a good thing in a Fokker triplane, but I will admit that I have ground looped that aeroplane a couple of times. But it's all been very slow, and in the end of the day, you just see it, oh, I can't fix it anymore, and you just turn the engine off and just see where it stops. No damage was ever done, I'm very pleased to say. But tricky aeroplane.
I can imagine, yeah.
Especially in confined spaces, which is where you end up. Because you've either got an option, if it starts to go, you can try and fix it by giving it a blip, because there was no brakes either. Mm. A blip of power, which will re-energise the rudder and might do enough to keep you straight. But if you haven't got a huge amount of room ahead of you, then you're worried that the blip of power will...
Take you into that space
pretty quickly. So you then end up in a position where you go, oh, actually, the best thing to do is actually close the power, try and fix it, but if it's not going to get fixed, shut the engine off and go for a little journey. But,
which is not something you'd want to do in something like R411X.
No, definitely not. No, not all pit special or any other aeroplanes, really. No, that would definitely be a bad thing to be doing.
Yeah. So when we were outside chatting, did you get to fly it with the old chunky radios in it,
or no?
You had the better experience of the two.
Yeah, So I think probably Pete Kinsey and Stu Goldspink probably did the early flying in 4118 after her restoration, and I think they found out pretty quickly that the centre of gravity was quite a long way aft with the original radio in it, plus all the armour plating that's still in R418. So that the decision was made to remove that radio set and put more modern avionics in there to keep it going.
It's still got the armoured plate.
It's still got the armoured plate in there. It's still got the guns in there. It's still got most stuff in there. But the radio, they did have to make a decision out of a practicality point of view to keep the aeroplane. Which does beg the question of, you know, how did the guys cope in 1940? Was it like that? And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, that is an intriguing question, and I suppose we could have fun speculating, but we've got other things to talk about. Yeah. So let's get into flying them. We're going to go outside and have a look at B-505 in a minute.
Yeah.
But that experience, this is one of those completely subjective ones. First flight in a Hurricane. What's going through your mind other than don't break it
is a fairly major one up there, especially at 418. The journey to fly that aeroplane started probably almost a year, maybe a little bit more before that. And when someone says, oh, you can fly my aeroplane, you never really believe it until you're charging down the runway in it. And James was incredibly generous to me and gave me that opportunity. It was something that I will always be very, very thankful for and grateful. So I was lucky enough to do a decent amount of Harvard time before then, so that prepared me nicely. But I'd also spent a lot of time working at Duxford at the Aircraft Restoration Company, doing some maintenance on it and looking at it and really learning the aeroplane and learning the system. So if I ever got myself into the position where anything was going wrong, I kind of had the knowledge to fix it. And that's an approach that I always take to any aeroplane, is that you really, really want to be comfortable with the systems that operate, especially these complex aeroplanes. I'd started a couple of times and I'd taxied around Duxford on a quiet day, just getting used to the noises rather than sitting in the cockpit making brum brum noises. Because all of that is quite a big thing.
Yep.
You know, I remember the first time I started that Merlin and it fired up. And I remember the first time I overprimed it and there's flames coming out. And I'm sat in a Hurricane that's on fire. And, you know, everything in your bones wants to sort of stop turning the propeller and jump out. And actually the right thing to do is just to sit there and keep it cranking until it, you know, fires and then all the flames subside. So it was good to have done all of that right before I'd even... sat at the end of the runway and opened her up, so that prepared me very, very well for that. The two-seater, was very early in its existence, so there was no kind of exposure. Or go and have a go in the two-seat Hurricane to kind of get exposed to the noise. But the first time I took off on the grass, it was on, I think, on an easterly runway out of Duxford, on the grass. And all I remember is just an amazing amount of noise. I don't think anything can prepare you for the noise and the vibration. And it was unlike anything. And I just wasn't really, as much as I prepared myself for that day and that moment, I was sat there going, is this right or have I done something wrong? And I think you spend an awful lot of time when you fly a new type, especially these sort of aeroplanes, is that you go, what have I done wrong? Is that vibration normal? And even now I sit when I fly, I go, is that right? But I remember getting the gear up and going away and flying around and just going, I can't believe it, I'm flying a Battle of Britain Hurricane up of Cambridgeshire.
Battle of Britain Hurricane off the grass at Duxford.
And then there's this moment where you go, oh, I've now got to get it back on the ground. So you kind of have to go, okay, we'll go back and we'll go and land it.
Which clearly you've done because it's still with us.
It's still with us. Thankfully, that's one of the things whenever I'm lucky enough to fly her. So I flew her yesterday, actually, and it was a good crosswind at Duxford. And it made me work quite hard.
Of course, because we had the storm blowing through yesterday. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, I don't want to be the chapter in this book where it met Mike Collett and then it ground looped and then sat in the workshop for another number of years while someone else rebuilt it.
They would have made you ring James as well, wouldn't you?
That's a phone call I wouldn't want to do. But yes.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I mean, it's just a bit of British history, isn't it? Mm. And you really feel that weight on your shoulders. Yeah. Whenever you fly it, you feel, you fly a Hurricane. It must be amazing. It must be so much great fun. It is.
But there's an equal level of stress to go with.
There is quite a big responsibility flying them. It's for sure. Hmm.
So, let's just... We're sat here in the Hurricane Heritage office. Where did that idea come from?
Which bit? The two-seater or...
Well, just generally, really, because the start of the outfits. I'm assuming Ultimate Aerobatics was first, and then this came along with the two seater in tow.
Yeah, so the way it kind of played out was Hurricane Heritage was a brand that James had built up when he bought R418 from Peter Vashman, and he was going for his journey to go and fly the aeroplane, and so I was lucky enough to meet him once he'd basically competed that journey, and he was flying his Hurricane, but he hadn't done any aerobatics. And then in chance, there was a conversation whereas we need someone to teach James how to get his aerobatic rating, and we need to teach James how to fly the Harvard and do aerobatics in the Harvard. He knew how to fly Harvard, but hadn't really done any aerobatics, and they asked me to do that. And so that kind of set us on a path together, where I was teaching James in his Harvard to do aerobatics. But before, I was prepared to teach someone how to do aerobatics in that particular aeroplane. I needed to at least have done a little bit on my own. It didn't seem like an unreasonable request, so I got to go and fly to Harvard. And from that, we formed a really good friendship. And then the R418 journey continued with me on the coattails a little bit. And then we moved into the two-seater. That came along a little bit later. Yeah.
I'm going to actually ask you now. I'm going to put Abigail on the spot. So you'll need to unclip and hand her.
Unclip. There we go.
Because my question for you is, what is someone's experience like when they book a flight in the two-seat Hurricane? So let's do a bit of a plug, really.
Okay.
Because this is also, you're selling this to my wife.
I can do that. So, people normally find us either seeing us fly over, word of mouth, air shows, displays, so have become aware of us, or even just doing an internet search. We're the only two-seat Hurricane in the world, so we tend to come up quite high on search options. The website is great. Really proud of our website. It's a great platform. We've got some great photos and videos on there. So there's a lot of information on there. But first port of call normally is people contact me, ask me about it. So I tell them a bit about our operation, when we operate, get them to kind of potentially choose a date or, check availability. Yeah, we get people booked in once they've paid. So the options are half an hour, 40 minutes or 65 minutes. But actually, we also arrange bespoke experiences for people, if they have a budget they want to work towards. So, for example, we had a chap who, I think his grandfather had passed away and left him £5,000, and he wanted to spend that amount of money. So we did, we arranged a bespoke experience for him, which was really lovely. So we can match budgets to experiences. And so, anyway, so once someone has booked, they get sent a very nice gift box. Which is, I can show you one shortly.
That'd be great. We'll put some pictures and things up. And
So they get that in the mail with confirmation and just further information about their day. Once they arrive here, they spend about the first hour with me. So we have to take them through safety standards and consent brief, so quite a formal brief. So there's some reading, some PowerPoint information. Get them kitted up.
So it's just like a longer version of going on a normal flight.
It's a longer version and much more in depth than any other type of flight. So it's quite comprehensive, the brief. Right. So not only done via PowerPoint, that's kind of a familiarisation exercise, but also in the aircraft itself, everything is repeated. You get to have the door, the canopy, make sure that you're completely happy with what you need to do in the event of an emergency.
Do you ever have people realise just how tight it is and start
it's
changing
their mind? It's not tight, actually.
Because you see, I am a little bit claustrophobic.
I always feel
those sort of confined spaces.
If you've sat in a Spitfire, I would say yes, they can be a little bit claustrophobic. It's very comfortable. There's a lot of room. Actually, it's not. I don't feel like it has a feeling of claustrophobic.
Too exciting.
No, it just doesn't have that feeling of such an enclosed cockpit. Certainly, if you've sat in anything similar, it's she's quite different. She was converted specifically for passenger carriage. It was never done as a training aircraft, so it does have a different feel in the back. So,
I guess that's the important point. But it is designed to be a passenger aircraft, so it has that advantage over the Spits, which are.
They can be a little bit tight, tight fit. But no, she's very comfortable in the back. Yeah, really comfortable. So, yeah.
Have you been up in her?
I have been up in her, yeah. I've been lucky enough to go up in her. She flies beautifully. Really, very elegant warbird. Really kind of, lovely aerobatics, really stable, beautiful to fly, very intuitive. Yeah, lovely, lovely, lovely aircraft.
So, you've got a pretty envious day job, really. Getting to...
It's not too bad.
Let people bomb around in her...
Yeah, we have a lovely job in that we get to share an amazing aircraft with some amazing people. Often these are special occasions for people. We've had villages club together to buy a villager an experience.
Wow.
So we've had some really lovely people come through our doors and... It's such a lovely thing to be able to share the Hurricane with them and, really kind of make people's dreams come true without making it sound too much of a cliche.
I guess the one thing everyone has to keep in mind, though, is the British weather. So flexibility is key.
Yeah, so for example, today we had three flights booked in. So we've flown two this morning. Obviously, you can see it's a little bit cloudy. So, I phoned our...
Thank you.
3 o'clock today and just offered him tomorrow, which is the forecast tomorrow is a little bit a lot brighter actually, so I gave him the opportunity. So we try and work with the weather. Often people have come from around the world to fly with us as well, so we definitely try to make things work as much as we can. We're a small team, we can be flexible, so we make it work around the weather as much as possible. We try not to cancel, but just shuffle, I would say, to make it work. And obviously, if the weather's terrible, we would have to reschedule. Yeah. But generally, we really try and make it work and work on the day to the best possible effect. So,
fantastic. So, my dear wife, Wendy, if you are listening. You see, it is a lovely day out. Of course, she could go up in it. That would actually be a fantastic idea.
Okay, so she could go up in the Hurricane, mm-hmm. and she could go up alongside you in a Harvard if you wanted to go in the Hurricane. There are lots of different options. We could put the 108 alongside you both with smoke on, have a dogfight.
Oh, there's
lots of lovely things
we could do. This is fantastic, because she endures my passions for this quite a bit. So in the back of my mind, it's not so much me, because I'm sure an opportunity would come up again,
Hurricane Harvard ME 108, that would be a nice day out for you both.
Perfect, yeah. Yeah, I can see her face right now. It's not as keen as many of our listeners will probably be, because she has to put up with
She'll
this sort of stuff.
Yeah. You can go and have a lovely formation flight, wave at each other, take photos, it'd be brilliant.
Yeah, and then she can hold going up in the Hurricane over me forever by saying we can't do it again. That is fantastic. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And I think let's head out and have a look at her.
Yeah, sure.
We're going to take a quick break so that we can get the latest from the Pima Air and Space Museum with Head of Collections, Andrew Bowley.
Here we are at the Pima Air and Space Museum with some of our Korean War vintage aircraft. Here is our F-86E Sabre. Which was the preeminent American jet fighter during the Korean conflict. Originally, we were flying a lot of straight-wing aircraft like the F-84 and, you know, reciprocating engine aircraft still like the Mustang, various other aircraft. When this aircraft made its debut, the MiG-15, which was used by the North Koreans, with also probably some help from other nations, but it was a game changer, swept wings, had a cannon, and really, you know, overpowered anything with a straight wing. Around that time, our F-86 started coming into Korea, which the two aircraft were pretty equally matched. Armament aside, you know, the F-86 had 50 calibers, while the MiG had, I believe, 20mm cannons, if I recall correctly. Three.
30mm, I think it was.
Was it 30mm?
Two 30, 220, something like that, yeah.
Okay. Cannon. Not the armaments. They're cannons, machine guns, which has always been a big argument. You know, the Americans were always full in on the 50 cal and the machine gun side of things, while a lot of other nations tended to lean towards cannons. You know, so depends who you ask which is the better aerial weapon. But our F-86 is actually a real combat veteran. Flew with the 51st Fighter Interceptor Wing. It's a bit of a Franken airplane. The fuselage did come from a Korean War veteran. The wings did come from another aircraft, but that was one of those things where we decided to go with, obviously, the identity of the fuselage, which, you know, has the more interesting history and has an actual Korean War combat provenance. It could be a little bit of a time, too, to talk about our curatorial choices with paint schemes.
Yes.
Usually we always try to paint our aircraft in markings that are historically accurate for that aircraft. This F-86 is an example of this. The markings on the aircraft are based on photographic evidence from the Korean War of this aircraft. Our MiG-15, on the other hand, like most surviving MiGs in a lot of collections, is a Polish MiG. It's not a Korean MiG. But because for this, we decided we wanted to tell the story of the Korean War, so we did paint this aircraft in North Korean markings, where usually we don't do that. We usually always try to paint the aircraft for, you know, the historically accurate markings for that aircraft. But like I said, once in a while, when we have another story to tell, we'll make an exception. Also, if we painted all our MiGs, they would all be pretty much in Polish markings instead of representing some of the different Warsaw Pact nations like we have.
To learn more about what is on display and what events are coming up at the Pima Air and Space Museum in Tucson, Arizona, please do check out their website at www.pimaair.org.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
And now, back to the show. Right, so we have come out to see this beautiful aircraft. Shall we do a bit of a walk around, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is B-505, otherwise known as Pegs. Our she's really a Mark 12 Hurricane, but she's dressed up as a Mark 2B, so we normally describe her as a Mark 2B.
But we just should point out that she is a glorious Canadian Car and Foundry one.
Yeah, as you can see from the serial numbers at the top.
There we go. So I'm with a country woman, shall we say.
That's one way of describing it. So, walking around the back. So we've got the rudder obviously here, with the rudder servo there, onto the elevator and the elevator trim. Looking around here and then coming back. All of this being Irish linen covered, which made it so robust during the war, and they could easily patch it up. And then coming around the exhaust-stained fuselage, as the team haven't given it a wash yet, as she's been flying today.
But to be fair,
it's a bit of a tina, doesn't it?
It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it looks
it?
A little bit. And there's a few sort of scuff marks where certain people have been sat in the front seat of the aeroplane.
Well, let's be fair, I was a bit excited.
So you should be. So we've got the gun bays here. These are obviously very important to make sure that they are locked, because they can cause real problems if someone leaves them open when we take off, because they will open against the airflow, which can cause some issues. However, there is really no need for us to be going in and out of the gun ports in this day and age. There's no ammunition in there, so we're not topping it up anymore. Ailerons, standard stuff. And then wandering around to the business end of the aeroplane, where you've got our lovely nose art for Pegs, which I'm sure we'll talk about shortly. Now, the way you can tell a later Hurricane is the oil tank is here, and you've got the refuel cap on the wing, whereas the early Mark 1s are in the ring route here. It's always quite a giveaway. And also the radiators, if you can see the radiators. This having the bigger engine needed a bigger radiator to keep it nice and cool.
Yeah. Lots of bugs in the oil.
Lots of bugs in the oil. It's a bit of a buggy day today. She has been busy flying today.
So it's not just my house that's full of daddy long legs.
No, the hangar's full of them. Useless facts for you. Obviously, massive undercarriage doors, which are designed not only to seal the gear up when the gear comes up, but also to help drag the gear down and lock it if there's a hydraulic failure. Now, you might wonder why these are all painted yellow. And that's because that's the lock. And the lock is up into the wheel well of the aeroplane. But I can see that in the cockpit. And by the fact it's yellow, it makes it really obvious when that's up and locking in there. So if the lights don't work on the undercarriage indicators, I can actually just look and I can see that the undercarriage is nicely locked.
Yeah, because that was something that's crawl under here. Something I never knew, there's the little window.
Yeah, so you can see the wheels through the floor there with the window. And this is where the locks go into here.
So it's a lot of thought going into it for the pilot to ensure that it's there, especially when you're saying when you have a hydraulic problem, the doors are designed to pull the gear out as well.
That's right. And it also gives the Hurricane a very low undercarriage and flap limiting speed of 120 miles an hour. If you think the amount of load on a hydraulic pump of pulling this wheel and this door up, there's a hell of a lot of force there, which is why it's got such a low limit. We've got a Hamilton standard propeller on it, rather than as it would have done in Canada.
Which, let's be fair, De Havilland propeller is a Hamilton standard propeller under licence, really, isn't it?
Oh, there we go.
So this is what you can only say to...
All I would say is that these are much easier propeller to maintain. And much cheaper to maintain than the De Havilland propeller. Certainly on our Mark 1 Hurricane, which has got a De Havilland on it. And that's obviously wood, whereas this is metal. Mm. Big radiator, so the centre is the oil, the outer is the coolant. We've got the 6 guns on it. Not that the guns are in it anymore, unfortunately. But as it was a hurry bomber, as Peter Teichmann did the restoration as a hurry bomber, the option would be to take one of the machine guns out, that one, and then you could put the bomb racks underneath on these pickups here. We have got the bomb racks, but we choose not to fly with them on because it adds drag and weight, and we're trying to keep the aircraft as light as possible to give us the greater ability to carry passengers.
And you then get into all the fun and games about people arguing about, you've got the carrier, why don't you put a bomb on it? And they don't understand the fun that's the right. CAA put through.
Yeah, so we were sort of in early talks of maybe it'd be fun to put some bombs on it. So maybe this, it might be a winter project, so we're having a chat about that. But the CAA oddly get quite funny about people flying with bomb racks and bombs underneath the other. Now, clearly, we're not going to put a proper bomb on it. It would be a wooden mock-up of one. But yeah. It'd be nice to be able to show it off as a hurry bomber because there's so few of them around. And it shows the capability of the aeroplane.
Yes, which kept it in service, especially in the Far East, right to the end.
Well, that's right. The Hurricane served in every single theatre of the war. And when you think they were firing them off ships in the North Atlantic, I mean, it's just incredible, isn't it? And the poor pilots knowing they're going to have to ditch next to a ship and hope they get... Well, I mean, it's just terrifying.
Yeah.
Just absolutely terrifying.
Luckily they knew they got extra rum when they got back on board for that.
I'm not sure it makes it worth it. I certainly wouldn't... Yeah, I don't think that would bribe me to do it.
It's a one-way trip. You've got to go up and shoot down an FW-200 Condor and then park yourself in freezing cold bloody water and hope somebody stops to pick you up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, there's a big debate about whether you ditch or bail out. Mm. I think the consensus is to bail out. But anyway. What else can I talk to you about on it? She does get very hot. I don't know how the guys flew them out in the desert when there's a tank buster variant. You know, we were recently, a couple of weeks back at Paris, the Villaroche Air Legend air show, and the temperature was about 35, 37 degrees, and that was really, the aeroplanes didn't like it, and I certainly didn't like it.
Because you're sitting on top of the radiator.
Yeah,
aren't you?
That's right. And the design is just slightly different to the Spitfire, so when it gets hot, it doesn't cool down quite as quickly as what the Spitfire does. So I don't know quite how they dealt with it in the desert. They had slightly modified Hurricanes, obviously, for the air intake, but I'm not entirely sure about how they kept the coolant cool, really. But they clearly managed it. So.
Well, should we have a look at the inside of it and see where someone...
Absolutely.
See,
we clambered our way up the steps. Fully caster and tower wheel. The tower wheel came off of eBay. The lovely story with that one is that was on a wheelbarrow made by a prisoner of war at RAF Coltishaw. And so when I found it on eBay and bought it, this is how you find parts. And obviously our maintenance company, the aircraft restoration company, have to go, we're happy with that tyre. But when I told the story to the people that I bought it off, they couldn't believe that their wheelbarrow tyre was back on a flying Hurricane.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
So I guess we have a look in the back seat to start with. So the canopy's split very, very nicely. Hawker Restorations have done an amazing job of this back seat modification. So if you can appreciate, it's a working aeroplane. So she's had a busy summer. But it's, we try and look after her, and it's all pretty immaculate in there. Lots and lots of room. People are always surprised by how much room there is in it, and also the visibility. The visibility out the back is almost, I'd say, as good as the back seat of a Harvard. little bit limited for instruments. You've got an airspeed indicator, but the reality is you don't really need very much more.
You're hoping the guy in the front's doing most
of it. Well, that's right. I mean, that's the business end for me. So if I close that back up.
That is just so nicely done.
Yeah, it makes access in the back cockpit really easy. So I flew a 102-year-old this year, and I've flown some guys that have gone to the bottom of those steps in a mobility scooter, and they still managed to get themselves in and out of the aeroplane. It's amazing what happens when the adrenaline starts to pump and they get close to the aeroplane they've dreamt of flying. So if we slide the canopy back, and they collect, and there's the business end of the aeroplane. You have to forgive the quad lock mount on the side there, but the rest of it's fairly original. It's, in this day and age, having moving map GPSs for these flights is very important. But
as for the rest of it, it's
pretty accurate. Yeah.
So you're not going to, aside of the little GPS-y sort of things, the rest of it is going to be in there. So you got your...
That's right. Yeah, we've got modern avionics at the top, unfortunately. But again, this is a working aeroplane, so it's really important that we have it accessible. But the rest of it's all, it's so all there.
Silly question times.
Yep.
Reason for the stopwatch?
Well, it just means I can manage the flight times. It's quite useful. As Abigail spoke earlier, we have 30-minute flight, 40-minute flight, 65-minute flights. Mm-hmm. So if I've sat that running, I know how far the flight will.
Okay, here you go. Do you get carried away when you've got some?
Always. Yeah. Always. Yeah, always. Yeah, I'd never got, you know, I'd go off for hours if I had a choice. But
it's, yeah, like I was saying to you before, I just remember being at Duxford when it was up there for the Christmas show with all the other ones.
Yeah.
It's so tastefully done. If you didn't know what you were looking for, you wouldn't notice the extra bit of glazing and
Yeah, well, she spent quite a lot of the time this year leading formations of Hurricanes around, and a lot of the people don't realise that it's actually got two seats in it. Obviously, in an air show, we can't have a second person in it.
Yeah.
So when we land, people, oh, can I have a look in the front seat? You go, oh, yeah. And they're always surprised to find that there's another seat in the back of the aeroplane.
So a passenger gets in on the right side.
Yep.
Pilot gets in on the left.
Left side, yep.
Yep. And away you go.
That's right. Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, so we're inside, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, I do fit, so which is a good thing. So, what's our sort of procedure here for turning her on?
Well, first things
first. Not that we're going to do that.
Well,
course,
you don't want it to start and then charge across the airfield uncontrollably, so it's always handy to set the parking brake. So the parking brake is a fairly British system on that lever there, and then down between your legs, you can see a brake pressure gauge. So you can see that the main pressure, the top needle, is about 280, 290 PSI. So that means we've got plenty of air in the system. So we then pull the lever, which I'll do as much as I can from here. But you can see the needles are coming up there and saying that it's applying pressure to the brakes. And we set that as a parking brake. We would then turn the fuel onto the reserve tank, which is down there. And then we've got a fuel pump, which is just here on the left. And we'd run that for, depending on how hot she is, would depend how much fuel we'd put in it.
Okay.
So she's already hot today, so I'd probably only give her maybe 5 seconds worth of fuel.
Okay.
All right. And then on your right-hand side, you've got the K-gas primer. So I'd unscrew that, and then we'd pump that and give it maybe 2 shots, given the temperature that she's currently in, and then I'd lock it. And then coming all the way over to the left, and you can see there's the throttle, but there's also a mixture lever there. So I then put the mixture into fully rich.
So all the way forward.
All the way forward, and make sure, because there is two dents, there's lean, how do they describe it? Lean and rich, so we'd go fully rich. And then in the bottom left-hand corner, we've got a boost and a starter core.
It's over there. Yep. So the spit, that's on the other side?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the spit, it's over here somewhere. Yeah, so you'd end up with your arm kind of going across a little bit just to kind of get that to work. So I traditionally push the booster, and I can hear that the booster's working in the headset because it's causing a bit of electrical interference, and then hitting the starter. Now, that should start the engine. So once it goes, then you turn the 2 mags on.
Okay.
Which are next to it.
Yep. Right. Just there. Flip them up.
And then your attention is very rapidly drawn over to the engine instruments over there. And the first thing you're looking for is the oil pressure to come alive and start to rise.
And what happens if that doesn't happen? You shut everything down really quickly.
Shut it down really quickly. Yeah. On a cold day, you know, you expect it to take a few seconds to come up, but generally she'll come up quite quickly.
So that's that one, and then...
No, the one below. Oil, PSI. Oil there. Yep.
So oil pressure there, oil temperature.
That's right.
And then...
Coolant.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then
we monitor her and warm her up if necessary.
So if it's cold, how long?
Well, we're really looking for about 20 degrees on the oil temperature.
So not much.
Not much. No, on a day like today, I think the outside temperature is about 20, so she's nearly there anyway. Mm-hmm. And about 20, we can start to taxi it. But before we want to go, we're looking for temperatures of the coolant to be about 60 and the oil temperature to be about 40. They're the numbers that we're looking for, really.
And then?
And then we taxi over to the runway, do our power checks, and then take her into the air.
So if we spin round... Yep. To show dear listener that is the back seat from in here.
Yep.
Again, you're right, that is a lot of room and a lot of glazing to be able to check things out. And I guess people getting videos with GoPros and things.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what these mounts are here that you can see. We can either run a 360 or we can do a GoPro. Most people love a hero cam and it's wired into the intercom, so it's to kind of share the experience.
See, for me, and I am biased, that's a very pretty wing.
It is a very pretty wing. Yeah. I mean, you're sat looking at an RF roundel with machine guns sticking out of it. I mean, it doesn't get much cooler than that. It is very, very cool. And the view over the nose is lovely.
It's, I'm inside of me, I'm making very squee sort of noises. So thank you very much.
I mean, if I close the canopy, it's always probably worth having a look.
Watch
your head, just duck a little bit. And then you see all the way they've done the canopy on the Hurricane. These planes actually can get in the way a little bit for formation flying.
Would you not be using them to also formate, that you'd be lining them up, or are you just still...
Yeah, maybe to a degree, but quite often you can lose an aeroplane in these centre sections here. So it's just something to look at. And it's very unique to the Hurricane, really.
Which I guess in a fighter is not exactly what you want.
Not really, no. But again, the aeroplane before that were open cockpit. Yeah, so
that does make life a little bit better.
Yeah.
And you were saying, with no gun sight here, it is coming out.
Gun sight would come out, protrude into the cockpit a little bit.
So.
Fantastic.
You're not going to be able to get me out of it now.
No, it's all right. You can spend more time in there. It's not a problem. You're not flying again today.
Yeah, sorry.
You might have to be pulled into the hangar, but...
but it's terribly familiar and just a little bit different as well,
yeah.
Which is, I suppose, a mark of a lot of the RAF aircraft.
That's
at the
right.
time. So.
Yeah, I mean, you're generally always looking at a standard 6, which is that centre, yeah. And the RAF always put the engine instruments together on the right-hand side, like so.
It's, yeah...
I mean, the big gotcha, and I'm not, is the gear and the flap mechanism down the right hand side.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I didn't ask.
Which is probably worth looking at. So,
let's see if I change hands.
So that makes it very unique. For the Hurricane.
So there we go. There she is.
So it's like a gearbox on a car.
Does it return to the centre each time?
So in practice, that's what you're meant to do. So. On what I call the fuselage side, so the side of the wall, that's the flaps,
yep.
And on the inside is the gear. So that will activate the hydraulic systems, and you don't want to leave that pressurised. So you go back into neutral every time you've sorted it out. But
is it like a push and twist sort of thing?
Yeah. So basically, there's a little lever on the side down the midway down. You can push that in and then slide. So if you do that, go and you can try it.
This one.
That's it, and go towards the fuselage side. And then you can go forward. There you go. So that would be selecting the flaps up.
Okay.
And then once the flaps are up, and the flap indicator is actually in this dark hole down here, which you might be able to see.
There you go.
Down here, yep. Obviously, you know, that's where exactly where you want to be looking when you're coming to land. And then you can go back into neutral once it's there. So you just put it into the middle. That's it.
That seems like something that was very good on a drawing board.
Yeah, so someone who didn't fly aeroplanes obviously designed that. And the needle underneath it is the hydraulic pressure. And a little adjuster on the right-hand side would be for the canopy de-icing system.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so that would pump fluid along these holes here and blow it onto the windscreen.
So that'd just be alcohol, I suppose.
Yeah. I don't know quite what they used. Oddly enough, we don't fly in icing conditions anymore, so...
Funny that, yeah.
I've yet to have a canopy that freezes up.
It's
and all important.
Yes. Let's
see if we can... Trigger. Yeah.
There it is. And that, can I twist it?
Of course you can.
Here we go. In my head, dear listener, I'm going back and back and back.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's, when we do our dog fights with the 108, or if we're flying out of ducks with the bouche on, you definitely did a dagger noises. I assure you.
Yeah. Okay, let's be honest. When you go into the dogfights, how serious is it taken with the person in the bush, or do they have to give themselves up?
Well, at the end of the day, you're always trying to look after the passenger. So depends who we're flying with, but we try and get a bit of a beat of how much G, how much roller coaster sort of experience they got in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're really game, then we can kind of up it, and then it goes into two pilots having an awful lot of fun, and hopefully the passenger having an amazing time. But dogfighting is a very good way of making someone feel rough. So it's really, really important to us to have some communication with the passenger.
A safe word.
Yeah, basically a safe word. I mean, I flew with a 80-year-old a couple of weeks ago, and we had the most amazing dogfight with Martin Oval Moe flying the Boucheron. And I thought 80-year-olds, and he loved every minute of it. Absolutely loved it. And we were looping, tail chasing, barrel rolls. It was fabulous. And he loved every moment of it.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I taxied back with him going, I love you, I love you, I love you. It was quite an experience, actually. Yeah.
Well, there we go. I'm just sitting here fiddling, because you don't often get to fiddle with stuff like that.
No, it's very cool.
Yeah. Super. Mike, thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. Now, persuade your wife to come and have a go. We'll let you come and have a go.
It's been a few days, and I'm still absolutely buzzing from that experience. I cannot thank Mike and Abigail enough for them putting up with me and my cough. I seriously hope I didn't get them ill. As you can see, I'm still getting over it. That would be terrible. But I can't thank them enough for their time and letting me literally crawl all over pegs, which was just the most amazing thing. I was covered in oil. It was, oh goodness, it was fantastic. If you want to take a flight in pegs yourself, or one of the experiences that we talked about, the best place to go is to hurricaneheritage.com. On the website, you're going to be able to find out all you're going to need to know about the different things that they can do for you, how much it's all going to cost, and when you're going to be able to do it. Bookings are there. Again, remember, be a little bit flexible if you can. The weather today isn't too bad, but it was just a little bit claggy when we were there on Thursday, hence pushing that one flight back a bit. Do check them out. All the links will be in the description below, along with their socials. And as always, got to thank our incredible sponsors out at the Pima Air and Space Museum in Tucson, Arizona, for their continued support of the podcast. We're going to have some more fun stuff coming up with them. So in this episode, as you heard, we had Andrew chatting about the MiG-15 and the Sabre. We're going to change these things up going in the future. I've heard they've done some filming for me. We shall see what that filming entails. So if you want to support the pod, tell your friends. You've all been great. Stats are up. Numbers are going up, which is what you want in these sorts of things. Remember, put some stars into your podcast app of choice. Hit the like and subscribe buttons. Do all that good thing. It really does help. And I've been humbled by the messages that you've been sending. Thank you so much. Of course, if you want to become a Damcasteer, you can. For £3 a month plus VAT at the bottom tier, you get all of this stuff early with different intros and outros. And it goes to keeping going for paying for the petrol to drive around the M25 and deal with cyclists on the M4. Yeah, that happened. Until next time, thank you so much. Our next episode is going to be about R101 with the fantastic SC Gwynn. We do segue a little bit to talk about Quanah Parker, but it'll all become clear. So thank you very much. Until next time, do take care of yourselves. The Damcasters is hosted and produced by Matt Bone and is a Boney Abroad podcast production. To learn more about our podcast and check out our previous episodes, head to www.thedamcasterspod.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.